response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
202, here on the Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is After Hours here on the Fan. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. You know, July is usually the most positive month when it comes to Jet fans and their optimism for the upcoming season. You know, I always say the Jet fan goes through the turnstile every July. And from what I've heard from a lot of Jet fans this month is optimism, except from Fliegelman. I mean, he thinks they're going to lose every preseason game, basically. But coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, I will tell you why I believe in the Jets, just not this year. Just not this year. I could sell you and I could buy optimism for the Jets, just not this year. That's coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, plus my Giant expectations for the Giants in 2026 and beyond. Plus, this hour, LeBron James going to Philly, my thoughts on that, the ramifications that it has on the Knicks. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call as we inch closer and closer to the deadline, which is August 3rd. The Yankees are in dire straits here offensively. They need to make multiple major upgrades with their bats. A catcher, an infielder, and an outfielder. Ideally, a right-handed bat. I've thrown the name George Springer out there. It's a name I've heard over the weekend. I'm just going to hammer that one home because I think George Springer would be a huge help for the Yankees. And he's a guy that has been in a lot of big games, has had a lot of big postseason moments. The catcher pool got a little bit shallower over the weekend as Shea Langeliers, the outstanding catcher with the Athletics, the former Oakland, current Sacramento, future Vegas, although they're not really called the Sacramento A's. They're just the Athletics, like their Prince or Seal. They don't really have a city attached to their name. But Langeliers plays for the Athletics, and he is a terrific player. Great power, and he would have been, an all-in, chips-in-the-middle type of move for the Yankees. But Langeliers is hurt. He's likely going to miss the rest of the year. But offense, offense, offense. Mason Miller, pipe dream. Skubal shouldn't go after. The focus for Brian Cashman and the Yankees over the next week, whether it's calling up Lombard and trading for multiple bats, it's about upgrading this offense. You have a World Series rotation. Not just getting to the World Series, but a World Series champion rotation. You have three aces, three studs, three guys that can get you to the promised land. But this offense, and oh, by the way, a bullpen. Paul Blackburn has been unbelievable. It's not a name you're going to hear a lot on the radio station, but Paul Blackburn is a name and a pitcher for the Yankees that has done an unbelievable job, really flying under the radar, so to speak, and he hasn't been given necessarily all the greatest of opportunities as far as high leverage spots, but Blackburn has been sensational. And what was once a weakness, this bullpen, I'm starting to think it's better than it was a couple months ago, and it's not, to me, top priority with a week left in the trade deadline. That's why get Mason Miller out of your mind. Get Skubal out of your mind and focus on this offense. Multiple bats needed to be added. And now with the news that Bellinger's going on the IL and we don't know the extent of it, to me, it puts even more onus on Brian Cashman and the Yankees trading for multiple bats. Let's head out to Old Bridge, New Jersey. Sean joins us. What's up, Sean?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm doing good. Thanks.
So I want to say this Yankee game that happened earlier, it was just a mess. I thought it would be like hopefully they would sweep the series, but I guess it wasn't meant to be.
Listen, Sanchez is almost a lock and an automatic at home. You're talking about a Philly team that in all likelihood is not going to get swept in a series in their park. I think the Yankees did their job Friday and Saturday. So it was one of those situations where you get out of there with a series win, two wins, you're three back from the Rays, you move on to Chicago. I get being greedy, but you're going into a spot on Sunday night, especially with the struggles that Will Warren has had lately, or even more than lately. He's just been flat out bad. Mm. You figured the Yankees were swimming upstream, and they were. And they took a beating on Sunday night. But overall, as far as on the field, a good weekend for the Yankees. But, Sean, for me, it is big picture. It is the trade deadline, and it is a massive week ahead of Brian Cashman because he has to pull the trigger on multiple deals to get bats on this team.
Yeah, I agree. When I saw that Bellinger guy, I'm thinking to myself, like, what's the worst that can happen now? What bad thing do we need next? Like, now we come to a point where we need players to, like, actually step, some of the young players to also step up.
Yeah.
Not to mention, like, that need some, like, players from other need.
Yeah, you need reinforcements. You need reinforcements, and you need... Like I said, it's put up or shut up time, and I brought this up. This was before the Bellinger injury last week. I said, Jason Dominguez, it's put up or shut up time. I mean, at some point here, and I know I get he's 23, but he's getting a long runway now to play, to perform, and to reach that potential that he had all those years back when everybody was touting him the next Mike Trout. Jason Dominguez has to step up. Guys have to step up because even at the deadline, even with the improvements, you're still talking about a month or so from Judge. Who knows when Stanton's coming back? Who knows when Bellinger's coming back? So not only the players they acquire here over the next 7 days or so, but also the guys that are in that clubhouse, in that locker room, need to produce. And there's just too many dead outs in that lineup. So someone has got to step up and carry this team with three all-stars out in Stanton, Judge, and Bellinger.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's. I don't know how they're going to do it. It's like, it's Cashman now. He needs to put on the big board. And I understand, like, they're trying to go with the big fish, but now you really, it's like, you got to, it's like one of those things, sink or swim. Like,
yeah, they need big fish, they need medium fish, they need tuna, they need all kinds of fish. They need every fish in the sea here, essentially, to help them out offensively.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Now,
and that includes bringing up a George Lombard, but listen, they have to do it because this is a year where they can absolutely get to the World Series, and then when they get there, though, that's where if the Dodgers get there, they got to widen that gap, or excuse me, close in that gap. You don't want it to be widened. You want to close the gap, and even if it's another team in the National League, I mean, listen, the Yankees still, this offense is not going to cut it as far as I'm concerned when they get to the stiffer competition.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I heard stuff about, like, saying, like, Dominguez was the future. Like, no, that's a load of crap to me. I think Lombard's the actual future.
His future might be on another team. Look, he might be a guy that would benefit greatly from a change of scenery. And that happens sometimes. You know, there are players that have all this promise, and they just don't get it done with the team that sort of brought them up through the ranks. And it needs... you know, a new coat of paint or a fresh look somewhere else. And then when that player arrives in a new location, they thrive and they end up being that player that the majority of scouts and fans and baseball pundits alike thought would be what they would be. And for Dominguez, maybe that's the case.
Maybe, but do you think, now this is what I'm curious on, if, let's say, do you think maybe it could be the same for Jazz Chisholm Jr.? Say, like, he... for example, they make the World Series, and then right. He becomes free agent. Do you think that's going to be like that kind of like scenario itself?
Well, with him, he's already had success with the Marlins, and now he's had success with the Yankees. So for me, it'd be more like if the Yankees just want to continue in the Jazz Chisholm business. Barring a great run here from Jazz, they win the World Series. You know, I think the Yankees will move on from him next year. I don't think they are going to commit long term to Jazz unless their hand is completely forced. Like I said, he just has an insane run here. He wins, you know, World Series MVP. Then, of course, you would bring him back because I think the outpouring and the outcry would be, you got to bring this guy back just for that alone. Outside of that, I think the Yankees are probably done with Jazz. Not that they're getting rid of him in the next week, but I think long term they will move on from Chisholm. If for nothing else, it opens up another avenue for a young player like a Lombard there, or even a Volpe there, or because I still think they are in the Anthony Volpe business. I believe they should get out of it, But I think ultimately the Yankees still feel like they should be in the Anthony Volpe business.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like Volpe, but it's just like the way he's been doing lately, it just hasn't been helping matters. That's like the main, like, that's like what worries me. And that's the thing, because I know I like this kid. He has a decent future, but the thing is, his defense is not that good.
Nope.
The way he's at the plate, it's not that great. I mean, it's okay, but not the greatest.
And seems to be a declining player. Now, you could talk about the injuries last year, but okay, this is this year, and you still feel like the defense is not where it needs to be. The offense is not where it needs to be. And you want to see a player, now that he's getting into his mid-20s, start to progress, start to ascend. You're starting to get into your prime. These should be the best years. And the production, the numbers, whether it's defensively or offensively, they've both gone downhill, and they're getting worse.
Yeah, and then now, like, coming up, you got a very interesting White Sox team that's been pretty, like, they've had their share, so I'm actually curious.
And the Yankees handled them when they came to the Bronx, but now it's a different story, you know, on the road. You know, you're coming off a series against the Phillies, so you wonder if there's not necessarily a letdown, but you got to get to a different city here, and we'll see what the Yankees do. But the pitching for the Yankees lines up quite well in this series, as they're going to be throwing Fried, Schlittler, and Cole.
Yeah, I agree. And then now they also got a former teammate in there, Grichuk. That's also an end bomb.
Yeah, the White Sox are spunky. I mean, give them credit. They're ahead of schedule, which they deserve a ton of praise for that. And we'll see what they do at the deadline, whether or not they are buyers or they just say, you know what, we're ahead of schedule. We'll just go with what we got, and we'll see if we can win this division and get to October. But they're spunky. I don't think they are a major threat, whether it's this week or long-term for the Yankees. But they are young, and they are on the rise, and they're a team that, look, they went through it, including having a historically bad year, but they have turned the corner, the White Sox, and they're going to be good for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. And not to mention, I think that one of their jerseys that the White Sox wear is actually pretty cool. I think it's the red and black. Not going to lie, that actually reminds me of the Bulls a little bit.
You mean the old school one? Yeah, that's probably my least favorite. I do like the White Sox uniforms. It reminds me of kind of the Raiders uniform, that color scheme. I do like it. I mean, the uniforms the Yankees are going to see, including their own, over the next two series are some of the best. I mean, I like the White Sox one a lot. Obviously, the Cubs is incredible. And I wonder out loud if any Yankee fans are doing the double dip in Chicago. It is the summer. You can take a week off. And you go to the south side, and then you go to the north side. You get to see Wrigley Field. That's a pretty cool week. Get to spend a week in Chicago, which is obviously, look, short flight or a long drive. But you get an opportunity to spend a week in one of the best cities in America. You get to see one of the best stadiums in all of baseball. Some would argue the best. I've never been, so I can't make the argument. Then again, I haven't been to a lot of stadiums, so it's hard to make that argument. It's just not, I've been over this a million times, but we'll go over it a million and one times. I'm not somebody that necessarily vacations and goes to an opposing park or an opposing stadium or an opposing building when it comes to basketball. That's just not something I do. That being said, I definitely want to see Wrigley Field at some point. So if any Yankee fan is doing that, that is super cool. And that's the play. I would go to both just to spend like a week out in Chicago, see both stadiums, kind of travel with the Yankees for a couple of days, and then ultimately make your way back home as the Yankees make their way back home. But the opening weekend was a success, at least on the field. But you lose Bellinger, who knows for how long. And the idea here is, all right, Brian Cashman, your turn. Big boy pants on. Huge week ahead of you. Deadline approaching rapidly. You're going to have to add multiple bats to this team. Multiple. Catcher, infield, outfield.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether it's Joe Adell, whether it's George Springer. And as far as the catcher position, look, Langoliers was a name that I, for one, thought would make a ton of sense for the Yankees, but unfortunately, Langelier suffered a major injury, and it sounds like he's going to be out for the year. Jeffers from Minnesota, I mean, look, the Twins are 3.5 games out of first place in a weak division. Now, they may feel, how do you do that, though, with 3.5 games back? You might feel like you don't have a realistic shot, and but you still wouldn't sell. You might not buy, but I still don't think you should sell. You owe that to your fan base. You owe that to your team. To bare minimum, stay put and try to go for it with the group that you have. And that's what makes the deadline tricky, and that's what makes the expanded postseason tricky, or the expanded postseason makes the deadline tricky, because you don't know who's going to be buyers, you don't know who's going to be sellers. And these weeks leading up to the trade deadline, this is the bleep or get off the pot. What are we? Like, you're dating a girl for 3 or 4 months and you haven't asked her out yet. You know what I mean by that. You haven't asked her to be your girlfriend. You've obviously asked her out, but you're in a situation where, you know, you're probably seeing multiple girls, and by 3 or 4 months in, she asks you, what are we? And that's, you better have an answer. If you don't have an answer, then I would say dump her. Dump her? Yeah, dump her. You give her the door test. But yeah, at that point, you have to just say, yeah, I'm out of here. Because if you don't have an answer 3 or 4 months in, then obviously she's not for you. But when it comes to the trade deadline, you've had the time to either bleep or get off the pot. I mean, we're talking about 6 or 7 days before August 3rd, according to my calculations here. So you're either a buyer, a seller, or a stayer-putter. Which is, the middle ground is always the worst, right? We've become that in society, the extremes. You know, you're either one direction or the other. So you either want to be a buyer or seller, but the stay-putters, that's tough. But I feel like that's where the Twins are at. So this idea of Ryan Jeffers makes sense. Same thing with the Orioles. They may feel like they are stayer-putters, even though they've kind of dangled Rushman out there. You know, it's okay to dangle. It's okay to flirt. But it doesn't mean these players are going to be on the move. Hunter Goodman, a name that I've talked about at length. The Rockies are going to want a King's ransom. And the Yankees, I don't think, are going to be willing to pony that up. And it's also possible that the Rockies at the final minute get cold feet and they say, you know what? Even though we've been rebuilding forever, even though we've had historically bad years, we look at the White Sox, and that's a team that has gone from the outhouse to the penthouse. That could be us. Well, not in the division because the Dodgers exist, but perhaps we could be a wild card team in a year or so. Hunter Goodman's a guy we would build our team around, and we're not going to trade him. Absolutely 100% on the table. But the Yankees need reinforcements in the worst kind of way. Aaron Judge, I think, will be back early September. Stanton. You know, Aaron Boone earns his paychecks when it comes to things like what is going on with Giancarlo Stanton. The timetable, or lack thereof, sort of navigating the waters of the media around here. This is where Boone earns his money. Because one day he's sitting there with John Boy on Talking Yanks, and he's saying, well, I don't know why everybody's saying Stanton's not going to be back anytime soon. He's progressing, and we think he's going to be back in a reasonable amount of time, which is so ambiguous. I mean, could you only imagine if you went out on a Saturday night with your boys, and you call your wife up at 11 o'clock at night, you pull an ET and you phone home, and you say, honey, I'm out with the boys, as you know, Saturday night, big city, New York. Don't worry, I will be home at a reasonable time. This is at 11 o'clock at night, you call her. Let's say you've been out for a few hours. Fast forward till 1, 2 in the morning, you call her up again, and you say, honey, there is no timetable for my return. How do you think that's going to go over? Probably not well. And the reason it's not going to go over well is because you made a fatal mistake. Number one, you called home. That's always a fatal mistake. You know, just say your phone died or something or whatever. The service was just awful in the city that night, honey. So the biggest mistake you made was calling home. But then when you called home, you gave expectations that, to me, when I hear that, oh, you'll be home at a reasonable time. All right, midnight, 1 a.m., you start strolling in. But now you're calling back at 2 a.m. and you say there's no timetable for your return. Because as we know, the city never sleeps. It's the only place in the planet at 5 in the morning that you can buy a slice of pizza or a Cadillac. And the night and the morning blend together quite frequently. So the mistake you made was saying, hey, honey, I'll be home at a reasonable time. When in reality, you should have just said, I don't know when I'm going to be back. Or just not call home. Really, that's really the point. Don't be an ET and don't phone home. And maybe text and say, honey, I'll let you know when I'm on my way. I'll text you when I'm 15 minutes out. Or even an hour. I don't know what the setup you have with your wife. Some like it 15 minutes before, hey, I'll be home in a couple minutes. Some like to know an hour and change. But that's where Aaron Boone, to me, made a mistake. He said one day, hey, I'm going to be, Stanton's going to be back at a reasonable time. And then the next day he met the media and he said there's no timetable. So which is it? I'll tell you which it is. They don't know. They have no idea. None of us do. Nobody does. Stanton, to me, we may have seen the last game he's played this year. I'm more confident in Aaron Judge. I am. I'm more confident that Aaron Judge will be back in the lineup this year than Stanton will be. And as far as Bellinger, I can't even speculate because we have no idea until he goes for these tests later today. We have no idea what the timetable is going to be. The only thing that Bellinger has going for him right now is time. There's a few months left to get healthy and get back. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. In the second half of this hour, my thoughts on LeBron James signing with the 76ers and the ramifications that it has on the Knicks. Let's go to Lance in Amityville. It is after hours. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. What can I do for you, Lance?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was just listening to what you're saying about the Yankees, and I don't think the issue is getting new bats. I think the issue has more to do with the line of construction, the constant changing. You know, as an example, when they called up, what's his name, the lefty.
Spencer Jones,
that's right. And I like Spencer, but, you know, batting him third and Jazz is batting sixth in that day. It's like, why? Why isn't, you know, that's what I'm saying. You know, move Jazz up. And as far as Dominguez and Spencer, you know, I say let them run because I don't think there are any bats out there they really can get that's going to make a difference. You know, a lot of guys struggle when they come to New York. They can't deal with
the pressure.
But
what about a name like a George Springer who has dealt with the pressure and has won championships and has killed the Yankees through the years? Now, we don't know if Toronto is going to trade within their division, but that's a name.
No, I don't think they will.
Well, but what about a Luis Arraez who makes contact? And I feel like if you're a guy that puts the bat on the ball, you know, pressure's not really going to get to you because you're kind of just a machine at the plate. He doesn't strike out. And look, I think the Yankees have to cut down on their strike. Okay, but you need slap hitters, though. The Yankees strike out way too much. Don't you think they need guys with high average and guys that don't swing and miss?
Yeah, well, you know, the strikeout streak they went through, I think there's a lot of pressure on the guys on the team right now. But I think consistency.
But they're going to have less pressure, though, in the next couple months and in October?
Well, you know, not having Judge in the lineup and now Belly lost.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of teams are recovered. You're right about the pitching staff. We do have a pitching staff that can take us all the way.
No doubt.
And, you know, a lot of times teams can struggle on offense and still make it, you know. So it's not like it's we have to get these bats. I just don't see a lot of teams out there going to give anything. Like George Springer, I don't see him. I definitely don't see Toronto trading him to us. But he's old, you know, and it's just not
yeah,
what
yeah, but
I
he
would,
was awesome last
want.
Year. Now, I know he's a year older from last year, and he hasn't had the best of years, but he's also been hurt a bunch. But lately, ever since the All-Star break, he's been swinging a super hot bat. I think that the you're right in a couple things there, and that is, yes, without Judge, without Stanton, most teams would completely crumble. It's a credit to, I know a lot of people don't want to give him credit, but it's a credit to Aaron Boone. It's a credit to the culture.
That they like Boone.
Yeah, it's a credit to them that they're only three games out of first place. Yeah.
You know, I think Spencer Jones, you know, getting it every day, lefty, right, it doesn't matter, let him cook. Because people have to remember, Judge, in his first 80 at-bats, struck out 40 times. Okay, so nobody thought him, you know, coming in next year, you know, winning rookie, breaking the record for rookies. You know,
I know you're not comparing Spencer Jones to Aaron Judge in the sense that you're not saying Spencer Jones could be Aaron Judge, but your point is that a great player, an all-time player like Aaron Judge, even he struggled, you know, out of the gate. And
he struggled coming up.
He did.
And Jones, too, I think he'd be good.
Yeah. But
he's looking good from the right side. I mean, the guy, you know, he's corrected something. So you got to let him cook a little bit. You know, the pressure shouldn't be on him to carry the team. But
it's got to be on somebody. Well, somebody Ben Rice, it's hot. Obviously Ben Rice. It's on his shoulders. But, I mean, as far as now the...
Oh, Ben's a revelation,
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, MVP level. But as far as the secondary option, like, I like Jazz Chisholm. I think he's a good, like, secondary option of Ben Rice. But you're going to need other guys in this lineup to continue to step up in the absence of Judge and Stanton. And if we want
to
just play an alternate universe...
Jazz.
What if Judge and Stanton don't come back, or they don't come back to the level that they are? Then you even
that's what scares me.
Yeah.
You know, they have to come back a little before the playoffs, because we all know how it's going to go. They take a minute to get going.
Yeah.
You know, and so, we're going into August. They really got to come back by mid-August so they can get their timing down.
Judge won't be back mid-August. That's literally off the table. It's going
to
take them probably, I'd say, a month. Once he's cleared.
He said he's running.
Well, but he's got to get cleared as far as the upper body stuff. I would say early September for Aaron Judge is a reasonable, at this stage, expectation for him to come back.
Well, let me ask you, as far as trades, are you thinking trading Dominguez and Spencer for any bad out there? Like, who's out there that you would trade them for? I would not want to trade those two guys. I think the long-term potential is... not worth the gamble to get rid of them, just hoping that some new bats come here and do something. Because that's not how it works. We've done that in the past.
Yeah.
It doesn't work out.
You got it.
You got to want to be a Yankee.
Yeah, yeah.
First criteria.
You got it. Well, you mean the player you're going to acquire?
They got to want to play here. A lot of guys don't want to play here.
If they have a no trade, obviously they could force it to not happen. But as far as being built for New York, You know that, and I know that, Lance. We won't find out till the player's here. We can talk about, hey, he's had success. Even I've said it with Springer, he's had success. Or a guy's had success in Boston, something that's a little close to New York. But until they put the pinstripes on, until they're under those, scrutiny.
Would you trade Spencer and Dominguez? Like, who would you trade them for?
I would, but those are guys I would have traded for a Hunter Goodman or for a Shea Langeliers, because I'm getting a catcher that's under a ton of control. They would obviously be in a trade for a Mason Miller, but I don't think Mason Miller is going to be moved. Fernando Tatis Jr. I'm just throwing out like names that potentially could be available. It would have to be a big time bat for sure, but you're going to have to give to get. And I'm sorry, Dominguez is not producing. Jones defensively produced when he came up, but offensively, he didn't. And I know patience, but you're preaching patience with a team that you feel like is going to go to the World Series this year. So patience is not necessarily something that is on the side of the Yankees. Not when you have this type of rotation, not when you have this type of league that you're playing in, which is the American League, and it's not good. And you have to... You have to at least play out the alternate universe where Judge and Stanton do not come back. Or Bellinger, dealing with a hamstring, ends up not ever being fully healthy for the rest of the year. I'm not saying that to be doom and gloom, but I think you have to, at the very least, play out that scenario. So if you play out that scenario, you got to be looking at Dominguez and Jones. I hate to say it, and it's unfair. You want to say Ben Rice is the replacement for Judge? Okay. Now Dominguez has to be the replacement for Stanton. Now Jones has to be the replacement for Bellinger. I mean, do you feel confident in those guys that they can be that? I don't. And I think Dominguez is still at a point in his career, age-wise, where other teams will be interested in him. He's 23. They might need a new coat of paint or a fresh location, a new place to succeed. Perhaps that's what a guy like Dominguez needs. Jones is still untapped. There are obviously things about his game that worry you. Like, what's the ceiling for Spencer Jones? Joey Gallo? A guy that has a bunch of big years, can hit the ball over the fence, but ultimately the long-term success isn't there because he strikes out too much, and you could pitch to a player like that? I don't think the Yankees could stay put. I know it sounds like Lance, our last caller, that he feels like they can. I think that would be the worst possible thing they can do, is stay put. It's too risky. It's too risky with the injured players and also with the lack of production they have right now. Like, offensively, catcher, awful. Volpe, awful. Rosario, awful. McMahon, awful. Dominguez, not good enough. Spencer Jones, a million question marks surrounding him. Can he hit at this level? Grisham, awful. We haven't said his name a lot, but awful for Grisham. And you could first guess that one. That really set the tone for the Yankee offseason, because Grisham, the Yankees were caught with their pants down with that spot. Goldschmidt gave you the great start, but over the last month, he's hitting under 200, Paul Goldschmidt. And that's understandable. I mean, he's an older player. The fact that Paul Goldschmidt was giving you prime Paul Goldschmidt numbers earlier in the year, you can't expect a guy like that at that age to hit well over 300 and basically, I mean, he was on pace at one point. It felt like they had 30 home runs and just have a renaissance kind of year. You can go with the attitude, the mentality, the Yankees will be fine. And yeah, they will be fine. But don't settle for fine. Go above and beyond that, especially when you consider the three aces that they have and the path that is in front of them. Dominguez and Jones, would I trade him for C.J. Abrams? Yes. Do I think the Nationals are trading Abrams? No, but there's a name there. Because we could start to play fantasy baseball, but until we get to 48 or so hours out, maybe a little bit longer than that, but a couple of days before the deadline, we won't really, really know who's available. Now it's purely speculation, purely just throwing names out there. But if the right bat comes along and Jones and Dominguez are players that another team values, yes, absolutely. They are not doing this, nor should they do this, nor will they do this. But Dominguez makes a lot of sense for the Mets. There's actually a lot of trades the Mets and Yankees can make. They're not going to, but there's a lot of trades they can make. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. It is a Lugie here in the late night. We'll get to your calls coming up in just a second here, but the second part of the 2 o'clock hour, I'm going to give you my takes on LeBron going to the Sixers, the ramifications that it has on the Knicks, and then in the following hour, we will get into why I, and I know a lot of Jet fans are optimistic in July, but I can't buy or even sell you on optimism in year one. Or this year, I should say. That I can't do. And I'll explain coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, plus my giant expectations and your phone calls, 888-808-1019. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
240 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is After Hours here on The Fan. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. The Fan Focus, it's presented by Chef IQ. Watch the game, not the grill. Get your gear at chefiq.com. It took long enough, but LeBron James finally made his decision, perhaps his last decision, and that is he is taking his talents to Philly. Let me first start by saying the Sixers are going to be an all-time epic failure. All-time. The hype and buzz that is already surrounding this team with the addition of Brown, with the addition of LeBron, to go along with the roster that they had already. The Sixer hype is going to be through the roof. the attention on them, the idea that it is their time now, they are going to dethrone the Knicks, they are going to the finals, they are going to win a championship. Everything now sort of has to go through Philly if you want to make it to the finals. The Sixers are all sizzle and no substance. Zero. And I said this to people that reached out to me when Jaylen Brown was traded. People in my life that just, because some people just need positive Tommy when it comes to like text messages or that, you know, they don't want to wait for the radio show. And they just hit me up and they say, well, what do you think of this Sixers situation? The Knicks are in trouble. And I said, this is when the Brown trade went down. I said, they're not. And then when LeBron signed with the Sixers, same thing. Oh boy, the Knicks are in trouble. Look at what the Sixers are doing. And it's like, the Knicks are not in trouble. Because here's the bottom line. The Sixers have zero depth, especially in their front court. None. Joel Embiid is basically a mummy trying to go up and down the court. He can't move. He's off injured. In many ways, he is a, I won't go as far as what Tiki called him, but I would say Embiid's a gutless player. Has not been able to get over the hump in his career team-wise. Obviously, personal achievements, yes. Individual ones, yes. But team-wise, no. We saw it firsthand here with the Knicks. In order to win a championship, you have to have depth. Having a great starting five, that absolutely is a big part of winning. But ultimately, we sort through this run. The guys on the bench contributed just as much and were just as important. And without them, the Knicks wouldn't have won a championship. Whether it's Shamet, whether it's Clarkson, whether it's Alvarado, whether it was Mitch, Shamet, all those players played a major hand and a major part of the Knicks winning a title. The Sixers don't have that bench. They don't have any bench. They have no depth. They are all sizzle, no substance. None. Yeah, they'll make headlines. Yeah, they'll be in the A block, which is the first segment, on most days on national television. But they will be, the Sixers, mark my words, an epic disaster, an epic failure, an all-time epic failure. Because it wasn't just enough to get Jaylen Brown, a champion, a finals MVP, a guy that can't get the Knicks out of his mouth. But they also added, in some people's eyes, the greatest player of all time. And now, along with Maxey, Edgecombe, Embiid, they have the best starting five in basketball, which they don't, by the way. The Knicks still have a better starting five than them. But the lack of depth and just the idea that you're going to throw all these players together, and we've seen this time and time again. To win a championship, you have to have chemistry. You have to be cohesive. You have to be one heartbeat. There's no way the Sixers are going to be that this year. No shot. And then you factor in a tough town, tough expectations. They will eat that team alive. It's already a basketball team that they gave up on, they abandoned, and they let the Knicks walk in there and basically take over their building time and time again, where it is, yes, in fact, MSG South, where the Knicks fan goes in there like, you're not home and you left me your keys to your apartment. And I walk in there and I drink all your beer. I eat all your food. I put my muddy shoes all over your table. I go into your bathroom. I take a dump. Don't flush. And then I leave. And I don't even lock the door behind me. That's what the Knicks fan, my fellow Knicks fan, does in Philadelphia and has been doing for years. And just adding all these stars in the attempt, desperate attempt, to try to be better than the Knicks will fall flat on its face, as the Sixers will. It will be an epic failure, an epic disaster. And I, for one, am thrilled over that because I didn't want the Sixers to just fade into oblivion. the more the merrier, because it only builds the expectations higher and higher and higher, and it makes the fall even worse for that fan base. The one that abandoned that basketball team, who are now all going to go through the turnstile. They're going to have their LeBron jerseys on. They're going to think they're going to win a championship, and they are in for a rude awakening. Rude awakening. Because the Knicks are basically returning whole. They swap Drummond in and got Mitch out of here. And I don't mean that. I probably should rephrase that. It's not that they got Mitch out of here, but Mitch left on his own accord, and then they brought in Drummond. The Knicks did. And as far as rebounding, you don't lose much with Drummond, and you get a better three-point shooter. Obviously, the defense is not anywhere near what it is with Mitchell Robinson, but Drummond can do things better than Mitch, and he can do things similar to Mitch, but the defense is one that he is lagging severely behind on. But that's where you just have to have a collective effort defensively. The Sixers are not, I repeat, not going to the finals. They're not winning a championship. They're not dethroning the Knicks. No way, no how. They won't have the chemistry. They won't have the cohesiveness. They don't have the depth. They lack it severely. The Knicks completely and utterly took them apart this year because they didn't have that depth. LeBron is also an older player, aging player, that might not have a lot left in the tank come playoff time. You're going to have to manage his minutes all year. You're going to have to manage Embiid's minutes all year. And you're going to have to try to make all the egos and personalities and everything work in under a season to try to get that team to be a well-oiled machine. When we saw what it took with the Knicks year after year after year after year, forging this championship team with the heartbreak, the tears, the blood of brutal playoff losses, playoff series losses. Wasn't an overnight success. It never is in basketball. Anytime you try to do it, it fails. Ask a Net fan. Well, we got KD. We got Harden. We got Kyrie. And I know everybody wants to point, whenever I bring this up, well, but Tommy, you know, everything that went down with COVID and injuries. Okay, but those things happened. And then everybody jumps ship. This is why the Knicks, not only for our purposes here in New York, but across the league, the Knicks should be celebrated. They should be just put up on a pedestal because this team, led by Leon Rose, the architect, brick by brick, the Knicks built their team the right way. The right way. Not this BS where, and LeBron is now becoming like Kevin Durant, and in the fact that he's a mooch and he's just trying to win a ring, to the point where his agent, Rich Paul, flat out said in an interview, well, look, if the Knicks hadn't won a championship, then LeBron would be a Knick. No, thank you. That ship sailed a long time ago. And this couldn't have worked out any better. Not only is LeBron James not a Knick, nor will he ever be a Knick, but he got to go to Philly and get those fans' expectations through the roof, only to be let down, severely let down. Because if I were a Sixer fan, I would blindly sort of ignore all the deficiencies, and I would get caught up in LeBron James and Jaylen Brown. It's a really fancy car driving down the street, but when you pop the hood, it's a disaster. No depth, zero chemistry, injury concerns. Embiid, even when he's quote-unquote healthy, the guy's basically a mummy going up and down the floor. And a fan base that probably wants to swallow them alive because they've already abandoned the team, but now they're going to be back, they're going to go through the turnstile, and they're going to believe that the Sixers can get to the finals and win a championship. But the reality is, they're not going to. The Knicks still have a better starting five. They still have a better team. They are still the kings of the East. They are still the measuring stick. They are still the standard. They are still the best team, not only in their conference, but in the league. But for the purposes of this conversation, it would be their conference. And adding Brown and adding LeBron, it doesn't put the Sixers over the top. It just doesn't. Nor does it put the Heat over the top by adding Giannis. The Knicks found out what it takes to win a championship. It's not sexy. It's not going to get you headlines or talked about on ESPN. But what wins championships is chemistry and depth. And defense. The Sixer team going to play defense? You know the Knicks are. And this is perfect, perfect for the Knicks. Because they can fly under the radar. They can be besmirched, not talked about. And I don't talk about here, but I'm saying in general. Nationally. They will be ignored. And it's a chip on the shoulder of Brunson. It is motivation for this team as they quietly go about their business and are virtually returning the same team. And the idea of a Kolick, a Diawara progressing and the younger players becoming more and more contributors on this team, especially come playoff time. Knicks are sitting real pretty. Real pretty. Boston got worse. Miami added Giannis, but they almost got worse by adding him. And Philly is just that superpower team that is all style and zero substance. Zero. And it's going to be a long fall from grace for the Sixers when you consider where they're standing right now and their expectations to where they're going to end up. And I was saying it for weeks. I hope LeBron went to one of these teams, whether it's the Cavs and the Sixers or the Heat, so that the Knicks could send him on his way. Because he signed a 2-year deal, but he's got a player option, which means he can say, see ya after a year. I'm retiring. Or maybe he'll go join the Warriors or something after this. But he's not long for Philly. I don't think he's going to play 2 years there. Because I think it's going to be a disaster. Epic. All time. And it really couldn't happen to a better fan base. Let's be real. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. If you're on hold, we'll get to you. More thoughts on the Knicks, more thoughts on LeBron coming up in the next hour. Plus, why I, and I've heard this from a lot of, July is one of those months where the Jet fans in our life are always extremely optimistic. Extremely optimistic. And I can sell you on positivity for the Jets. I just can't sell you on positivity for this upcoming season. And I'll explain that coming up, plus my giant expectations for the Giants. That's all in the 3 o'clock hour. It is After Hours. The phone number to join the conversation, 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan.
Every week on The Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.